Well, we all know about clickbait on the internet, don't we? So many videos on YouTube have a headline that makes you think they're going to tell you something, and then when you go there and watch the video, they don't tell you the answer to what they said they were going to tell you. They don't give you the information they promised. Happens so often. So it's really important that when we promise something, we deliver, first of all, but it's better not to promise. It's better just to deliver and continue delivering and deliver again. Today is December 22nd, 2023 of the Common Era. It's 3 days from that special day that means so much to so many people. It's 1655 hours Eastern Standard Time. And Ward Green with you again today to do the study of the Crucible article, the C-cubed Crucible of Credible Creed. Crucible of Credible Creed. And we call it that because it's not clickbait. We're actually giving the final result in the title of the article, that this is the Crucible of Credible Creed. It's how we judge the true creed or religion. The true faith is judged through this chronology, which is a crucible. And you can't recommend or recognize, it's wrong to recognize an organization in place of Jehovah or Jesus. So we're not recommending any organization here, but what we are recommending is the chronology. It's the chronology that we're recommending. And that's part of the timeline. It is the timeline of the Bible. But it's part of the Bible. The Absolute Chronology. Chapter 2, paragraph 10 now of the Crucible article. The Absolute Chronology from the Ebers Papyrus does provide for both the dates and historicity of Amenhotep I. Unlike the later Pharaoh Thutmose III, and here we're dating him from 1469, to 1440, right, which is, that's dated based on the fact that his predecessor ruled with him, Hatshepsut, for the first 22 years or so, or 21 years of his reign. So he's actually 1493 because he backdated his reign 3 years. Until 14, I believe the final year is 1439 actually for his final year, but it's in this ballpark here. And this is an acceptable way of presenting it right there, 1469 to 1440, but it's maybe wrong by 1 year at the end there. Who listed this pharaoh? He listed 119 kings as conquered in 1468 BCE at the Battle of Megiddo. I think that that number hasn't changed since the writing of this article. That's the Battle of Megiddo, 1468. It's also called the Battle of Armageddon in prophecy of the end times. But it's the Battle of Megiddo, so it's an important name, exciting name, Megiddo. But the original Battle of Megiddo was 1468 BCE, as we date it in the genealogy. In Canaan is where it occurred. And Pharaoh Thutmose III listed 119 kings conquered in that battle. But unlike that, Pharaoh Amenhotep I was not well known for military exploits made in the districts of Asia. During an apparently peaceful reign, he is written to have expanded the Temple of Karnak within Thebes itself. Amenemheb, the court astronomer of Amenhotep, is an inventor of the first water clock. According to his tomb biography, the first water clock. That sounds very remarkable. It is said that Amenhotep I was the first pharaoh to build his tomb in a location separated from his mortuary temple. The tomb of his queen Amos Meritamon was found near to his posited temple site at the north end of Deir el-Bari. Amenhotep may have appointed Thutmose I as co-regent before his own death, some say, because Thutmose's name appears next to Amenhotep's on a bark, which was used as fill for the third pylon at Karnak. This being thus far unverified. That's the end of our study of crucible cubed, or C3, for today. Our scripture for today, little ones, is from Lamentations 4 and 10. This is the proof that the women in Jerusalem did eat their own children during the siege of Nebuchadnezzar. It says there, this is Jeremiah's book, Lamentations, chapter 4, verse 10. The very hands of compassionate women, Jeremiah was there, so he knows, or he knew, the very hand of compassionate women have boiled their own children. They have become as bread of consolation to one during the breakdown of the daughter of my people. So that's a real tragedy when people are so desperate for food that they eat their own young. It's just unspeakable almost. I mean, except that it is spoken there. 2 Samuel 21, now there came to be a famine in the days of David for 3 years, year after year, and David proceeded to consult the face of Jehovah. David, remember when David took the census? A couple of chapters ago, David took a census. I don't know whether it was 18 or 19. And then he numbered the people in 18, 2 Samuel 18:1. And after he numbered people, it was wrong to number the people. That was something that Jehovah said. I think it was in the law of Moses. You shouldn't number the people. You need to trust in Jehovah, not worry about how many army you have, how many people in the army. But David was numbering the people, and then that was when his son died at the same time. So in that same chapter. Now, so there was a famine, and David proceeded to consult the face of Jehovah. Well, that's not bad, consulting Jehovah, but you don't count up how many men in your army. You're not supposed to do that. That's not trusting in God, right? That's trusting in numbers of humans. Jeremiah 17:5, right? You're cursed if you do that. Then Jehovah said in 2 Samuel chapter 21, verse 1, upon Saul and upon his house there is blood guilt, because he put the Gibeonites to death. So the king called the Gibeonites and talked to them. Incidentally, the Gibeonites were not of the sons of Israel, but of the remainder of the Amorites, and the sons of Israel themselves had sworn to them. But Saul sought to strike them down in his feeling jealous for the sons of Israel and Judah. And David went on to say to the Gibeonites, what shall I do to you, and with what shall I make atonement, that you may certainly bless the inheritance of Jehovah? So the Gibeonites said to him, it is not a matter of silver or gold for us in connection with Saul and his household, neither is it ours to put a man to death in Israel. At that he said, whatever you are saying, I shall do for you. At this they said to the king, the man that exterminated us and that schemed to annihilate us from subsisting in any of the territory of Israel, they're referring to Saul, let there be given to us 7 men of his sons, and we must expose them to Jehovah in Gibeah of Saul, the chosen one of Jehovah. And that was the end of their request. Accordingly, the king said, I myself shall give them. However, the king felt compassion upon Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, on account of the oath of Jehovah that was between them, between David and Jonathan, the son of Saul, the late Jonathan. Consequently, the king took the 2 sons of Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, whom she bore to Saul, Armoni and Mephibosheth, evidently another Mephibosheth, and the 5 sons of Michal, the daughter of Saul, whom she bore to Adriel, the son of Barzillai, the Maholathite. Then he gave them into the hand of the Gibeonites, and they proceeded to expose them on the mountain before Jehovah, so that the 7 of them fell together, and they themselves were put to death in the first days of harvest at the start of the barley harvest. However, Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, took sackcloth and spread it for herself upon the rock from the start of harvest until water poured down upon them from the heavens. And she did not allow the fowls of the heavens to rest upon them by day, nor the wild beasts of the field by night. At length it was reported to David what Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, Saul's concubine, had done. So David went and took the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan his son from the landowners of Jabesh Gilead, who had stolen them from the public square of Bethshan. Well, they were called valiant men who went and took the bones off the wall and they buried them. And now they're being called thieves. Where the Philistines had hanged them, they took the bones, remember? And they were called valiant men. Where the Philistines had hanged them on the day that the Philistines struck down Saul on Gilboa, the Philistines had hung the bones on the wall. They'd hung the corpses on the wall. And he proceeded to bring up from there the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan his son, that is, from the place where they'd been buried by these valiant men. And furthermore, they gathered the bones of the men being exposed. Then they buried the bones of Saul and of Jonathan his son in the land of Benjamin in Zelah, in the burial place of Kish his father, Saul's father, that they might do everything that the king had commanded. Which king? Evidently King David. Possibly maybe something about what King Saul had commanded with regard to his burial. So God let himself be entreated for the land after this. And the Philistines came to have war again with Israel. Accordingly, David and his servants with him went down and fought the Philistines, and David grew tired. And Ishbibenob, who was among those born of the Rephaim, the weight of whose spear was 300 shekels of copper, which is about, I'm looking for it here, about 7.5 pounds or 3.4 kilograms of copper, and who was girded with a new sword, got to think of striking David down. At once Abishai, I'm going to pronounce that I, not A, I think, the A-I at the end of a word is not accented or accented. Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, came to his help and struck the Philistine down and put him to death. At that time the men of David swore to him, saying, "You must not go out with us to the battle any more, that you may not extinguish the lamp of Israel." And it came about after this that war arose once more with the Philistines at Gob. Then it was that Sibbekai the Hushathite struck down Saph, who was among those born of the Rephaim. And war arose once again with the Philistines at Gob. And Elhanan the son of Jeari-Oregim, the Bethlehemite, got to strike down Goliath the Gittite, the shaft of whose spear was like the beam of loom workers. Another giant. It sounds like another giant. Yeah, from among the Philistines, who was also called Goliath, the same name as the giant whom David had struck down in his youth. And war arose yet again at Gath, when there had happened to be a man of extraordinary size, with 6 fingers on each of his hands and 6 toes on each of his feet, 24 in number, and he too had been born to the Rephaim, and he kept taunting Israel. Finally, Jonathan, the son of Shimei, David's brother, because it's written like that, two separate vowels at the end, Shimei seems like the way to pronounce it, and David's brother struck him down, the son of David's brother, Shimei. These 4 had been born to the Rephaim in Gath, and they came to fall by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. There were 4 giants there mentioned. Ishbibenob, I should say. That was the first one. And then there was Saph, one of the Rephaim. And then there was Elhanan. No, that he was not. He was Goliath. struck down by Elhanan. That's right. Goliath. And then there was the man who had six fingers and six toes on each of his hands and feet. So there were four men in all, four giants. And that's all for the reading of 2 Samuel for today. Lamentations chapter 4. Aleph. Oh, how the gold that shines becomes dim, the good gold. Oh, how the holy stones are poured out at the head of all the streets. Beth. As for the precious sons of Zion, those who were weighed against for fine gold, how they have been reckoned as large jars of earthenware, the work of the hands of a potter. Gimel. Even jackals themselves have presented the udder. They have suckled their cubs. The daughter of my people becomes cruel like ostriches in the wilderness. Daleth. The tongue of the suckling has cleaved to its palate because of thirst. Children themselves have asked for bread. There is no one dealing it out to them. He. The very ones that were eating pleasant things have been struck with astonishment in the streets. The very ones that were being reared in scarlet have had to embrace ash heaps. Wah. The punishment for the error of the daughter of my people also becomes greater than the punishment for the sin of Sodom, which was overthrown as in a moment, and to which no hands turned helpfully. Zion. Her Nazarites were purer than snow. They were whiter than milk. They were, in fact, more ruddy than corals. Their polish was as the sapphire. Chaith. Their aspect has become darker than blackness itself. They have not been recognized in the streets. Their skin has shriveled upon their bones. It has become just as dry as a tree. Taith. Better have those slain with the sword proved to be than those slain by famine, because these pine away, pierced through for lack of the produce of the open field. Yod. The very hands of compassionate women have boiled their own children. They have become as bread of consolation to one during the breakdown of the daughter of my people. Kaf. Jehovah has accomplished his rage. He has poured out his burning anger, and he sets a fire ablaze in Zion, which eats up her foundations. Lamed. The kings of the earth and all the inhabitants of the productive land had not believed that the adversary and the enemy would come into the gates of Jerusalem. Mem. Because of the sins of her prophets, the errors of her priests, there were in the midst of her those pouring out the blood of righteous ones. Nun. They have wandered about as blind in the streets. They have become polluted with blood, so that none are able to touch their garments. Samech. Get out of the way, unclean, they have called out to them. Get out of the way, get out of the way, do not touch. For they have gone homeless. They have also wandered about. People have said among the nations, they will not reside again as aliens. P. The face of Jehovah has divided them up. He will not look upon them again. Men will certainly show no consideration even for the priests. They will certainly show no favor even to the old men. Ayin. While we yet are, our eyes keep pining away in vain for assistance to us. During our looking about, we have looked out to a nation that can bring no salvation. Tzadeh. They have hunted our steps so that there is no one walking in our public squares. Our end has drawn near. Our days have come to their full, for our end has come. Quoth, swifter than the eagles of the heavens our pursuers have proved to be. Upon the mountains they have hotly pursued us. In the wilderness they have lain in wait for us. Resh. The very breath of our nostrils, the anointed one of Jehovah, has been captured in their large pit. The one of whom we have said, in his shade we shall live among the nations. Sin. Exult and rejoice, O daughter of Edom, dwelling as you do in the land of Uz. To you also the cup will pass along. You will become drunk and show yourself in nakedness. Ta. Your error, O daughter of Zion, has come to its finish. He will not carry you off into exile again. He has turned his attention to your error, O daughter of Edom. He has uncovered your sins. That's the end of Lamentations chapter 4. We have time to discuss our last chapter, which is the chapter Luke 24, because we want to compare with Matthew. First, I want to go back to Matthew again, because we looked at this. We didn't look at it last time, but we looked at it before that. But I made a statement that the white clothing was not mentioned. And of course, the difference in Matthew was that the man was not called a man, he was called an angel. In verse 2, Matthew 28 and 2. He wasn't called a man. And his clothing was said to be white as snow, but his outward appearance was as lightning. So he wasn't really, he wasn't a man wearing a white robe. In Matthew, he was an angel who looked like lightning, and his clothing was white as snow. So now when we look at, in Mark, it was a man, a young man wearing a white robe. And that's good, because that indicates the authenticity of the Gospels, that all the accounts have their own character. They're not completely manufactured, you know, as some kind of identical items. And the same thing with believers. We shouldn't be all saying the same exact thing. That's nonsensical. That just speaks to the fact that it's not real faith if we don't have our own faith that comes from our own research and our own beliefs. Surely we're not going to say exactly the same thing as our brothers are going to say. On the first day of the week, however, they went very early to the tomb, bearing the spices they had prepared, Luke chapter 24 and 1. But they found the stone rolled away from the memorial tomb. That's verse 2. That's consistent with the other Gospels, Matthew and Mark, isn't it? And when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus, and that's also consistent. While they were, verse 4 now, in perplexity over this, look, two men in flashing clothing stood by them. So they're called men, but their clothing is flashing. Now, what kind of people wear flashing clothing? Nobody wears flashing clothing. Angels, yes, perhaps angels, because how can clothing flash? I mean, nowadays we could have lights that flash in the clothing. I mean, the clothing could flash because it could be driven by an electronic circuit in the modern day, but back in those days, flashing clothing would indicate these were not normal men. So again, it's a different account. They're not called angels. Right there, they're not, but they're called men. But they're wearing flashing clothing, which suggests they're not men. And these two men in flashing clothing stood by these women. As the women became frightened, verse 5, and kept their faces turned to the ground, the men said to them, why are you looking for the living one among the dead? These are the angels speaking to the women. Why are you looking for the living one among the dead? He is not here, but has been raised up. And that verse 6, he is not here, but has been raised up, is in some doubt as to whether that's in the original manuscript. So that's just that one little bit. He is not here, but he has been raised up. That may not be original to the manuscript, to the original book of Luke. Recall how he spoke to you, verse 6, continuing, while he was yet in Galilee, saying that the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be impaled, and yet on the third day rise. Right. Actually, that expression, he is not here but has been raised up, it's in Papyrus Fuad 75, Sinaitic manuscript, Alexandrine, whatever that is. What is that? Is that Vatican? Oh yeah, that's the Alexandrian manuscript, and then Vatican manuscript 1209, the Latin Vulgate, the Syriac, and the Armenian versions, they all have that expression, he is not here but has been raised up, whereas the Targums, I think it is, I'm not sure what D is, maybe it's the Targum, whatever D means, and some other manuscript omit that. So there's a couple of manuscripts omit that he is not here but has been raised up. So recall that Jesus spoke to you while he was yet in Galilee, saying that on the third day he would rise, right? So they called his sayings to mind, and they returned from the memorial tomb and reported all these things. These women reported all these things to the 11, and that's the 11 apostles, and to all the rest. They were the Magdalene Mary, and Joanna, and Mary, the mother of James. Also, the rest of the women with them were telling the apostles these things. So there were a number of women there that saw these angels. Now here there was more than one angel in this account of Luke. In the other account, it was one angel. In both Mark and Matthew, it was one man in Mark and one angel in Matthew. But now there are two angels. And they're called men again, in flashing clothing this time, though, so that they're like angels. So these women told the apostles. However, these sayings appeared as nonsense to them, and they would not believe the women. But Peter rose and ran to the memorial tomb. And again, there's two manuscripts that admit this section. And stooping forward, he beheld the bandages alone, so he went off wondering within himself at what had occurred. That's the end of the section that's missing from those two manuscripts, the same two manuscripts that it was, the other part was missing from, D and IT, whatever those two are. But look, on that very day, two of them were journeying to a village about 7 miles distant from Jerusalem and named Emmaus. And they were conversing with each other over all these things that had come about. Two of whom? Well, two of the apostles. Now, as they were conversing and discussing, Jesus approached and began walking with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. He said to them, "What are these matters that you are debating between yourselves as you walk along?" And they stood still with sad faces. In answer, the one named Cleopas said to him, "Are you dwelling as an alien by yourself in Jerusalem, and so do not know the things that have occurred in her in these days?" And he said to them, "What things?" They said to him, "The things concerning Jesus the Nazarene, who became a prophet, powerful in work and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and rulers handed him over to the sentence of death and impaled him. But we were hoping that this man was the one destined to deliver Israel." Yes. "And besides all these things, this makes the third day since these things occurred." Well, they call it the third day, right? But it's 3 days and three nights he was supposed to be in the tomb. And they often say, when the Jews, whenever they said the third day, it could have been the fourth day. It could have been 3 days and some hours. That's how they used the terminology. It was an ambiguous statement to say the third, or to say the 11th, for the same exact reason. I mean, it was the same exact thing. "Moreover, certain women from among us also astonished us," verse 22, "because they had been early to the memorial tomb, but did not find his body, and they came saying they had also seen a supernatural sight of angels." There, you see, so they agreed. In this book of Luke, now that it agrees that they were actual angels, not just men, who said he is alive, these angels. They said Jesus is alive. Further, some of those with us went off to the memorial tomb, and they found it so, just as the women had said, but they did not see him. So he said to them, Jesus said to them, verse 25, "O senseless ones and slow in heart to believe on all the things the prophets spoke, was it not necessary for the Christ to suffer these things and to enter into his glory? And commencing at Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them things pertaining to himself in all the scriptures." Finally, they got close to the village where they were journeying, and he made as if he was journeying on further, but they used pressure upon him, saying, "Stay with us, because it is toward evening, and the day has already declined." With that, he went in to stay with them. And as he was reclining with them at the meal, he took the loaf, blessed it, broke it, and began to hand it to them. At that, their eyes were fully opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from them. That's the remarkable thing there. He disappeared. And they said to each other, "Were not our hearts burning as he was speaking to us on the road, as he was fully opening up the scriptures to us?" And in that very hour they rose and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and those with them assembled together, saying, "For a fact the Lord was raised up, and he appeared to Simon." So the Lord had appeared while these men were on the road, they'd appeared to Simon. Now they themselves related the events on the road and how he became known to them by the breaking of the loaf. While they were yet speaking of these things, he himself stood in their midst. He appeared again and said to them, "May you have peace." Once again, the part where it says he said to them, "May you have peace," is omitted by those two manuscripts again. But because they were terrified and had become frightened, they were imagining they beheld a spirit. They didn't think it was real. So Jesus said to them, "Why are you troubled, and why is it doubts come up in your hearts? See my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Feel me and see, because the spirit does not have flesh and bones, just as you behold that I have." And as he said this, he showed them his hands and his feet. And that part again is omitted by those two manuscripts about him. As he said this, he showed them his hands and his feet. But while they were still not believing for sheer joy and were wondering, he said to them, "Do you have something there to eat?" And they handed him a piece of broiled fish, and he took it and ate it before their eyes. He now said to them, "These are my words which I spoke to you while I was yet with you, that all the things written in the law of Moses and in the prophets and Psalms about me must be fulfilled." Then he opened up their minds fully to grasp the meaning of the scriptures, and he said to them, "In this way it is written that the Christ would suffer and rise from among the dead on the third day," right? 3 days and three nights. "And on the basis of his name, repentance for forgiveness of sins would be preached in all the nations, starting out from Jerusalem. You are to be witnesses of these things, and look, I am sending forth upon you that which is promised by my Father. You, though, abide in the city until you become clothed with power from on high." But he led them out as far as Bethany, and he lifted up his hands and blessed them. And as he was blessing them, he was parted from them and began to be borne up to heaven. And they did obeisance to him and returned to Jerusalem with great joy. And they were continually in the temple blessing God. That's the end of Luke 24. And Luke wrote the book of Acts. And in the book of Acts, it continues the account of what... Well, it actually talks more about what he said before he was borne up to heaven. In the book of Acts, chapter 1. But we're at the end of our study in a few seconds now. So... the end of our video. We learned so much from having the accurate chronology and from knowing also about the ambiguity of the Hebrew language. When they say the third day, it doesn't mean the third day at all. It means something like 3 or 4 days, you know, the third or fourth day is what it really means. We know it doesn't mean the second day, that's for sure. But the prophecy of Jonah, right? That Jonah would be in the middle of the heart of the fish for 3 days and three nights. That's the end of our study. It's December 22nd, 2023 of the Common Era, and the time is 1727 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you, and I hope you're doing well. It's good to see you on my behalf. This is Gully, and this is Cassie, and they are saying... bye for now.